What you're about to hear is part of the PodGods Network. If you have a problem with anything you hear, please write it in an email. Enjoy the show!
This episode of the Random Variety Show is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Visit audibletrial.com/randomvarietyshow to get your free download. And now, on with the show!
Hey guys, this is Dave!
And this is Andy!
From FFOP Radio, and you're listening to the Random Variety Show podcast.
Season 2, Episode 9.
Enjoy!
It's the Random Variety Show podcast with Charlie Miller. Hey, that's me. It's the only bi-weekly podcast that's random, has variety, and is a show. For the week of April 9th, 2013. Well, hello and welcome back to another great episode of the Random Variety Show podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. I really do appreciate it. First off the list, if I sound a little bit different, well, that's because I was able to get a Blue Yeti microphone. Yeah! And so this is the very first recording with it, so feedback is very much welcome. Our guest this episode, I can only call it a man for all seasons, the one and only Mark Hershon from the Succotash Comedy Podcast. We'll learn more about that in a bit. And I'm sure you've noticed by the length of the download and the length of the podcast that this episode's running a little bit longer than usual. And, well, that's because, well, a couple reasons. One, I was on hiatus for about 3 months, so I owe it to my fans to give them a little bit extra to make up for that lost time. But also, this episode is kind of a semi-dedication homage to Mark and the crew over at Studio P, the home of the hit, which is where Succotash is produced by Joe Polino, mostly because the Succotash podcast is what really inspired me to get the Random Variety Show off the ground. It was the frosting on the cake, you might say. So not only do we have the interview with Groucho Marx and Mark Hershon, but we also have some clips from the Succotash podcast. It's just a way to say thank you, Mark and Joe, for all the work that you do. Of course, we have our regular segments, voicemail, listener feedback, and now we're going to Yes, the random segment. Now, if you're a first-time listener, well, right off the bat, thank you very much for downloading and listening. I really do appreciate it. And if you're a long-time listener, well, you guys know that I love you. You're the best fans. It warms the cockles of my heart. Anyhow, the random segment is a chance for me to tell you what's been going on for the last few weeks. And, well, most of the random segments have revolved around my son, Drew. And that's because, well, my life kind of revolves around my son, Drew. So, you know, it's what's happening in my life right now. And as of this recording, he is 1 week off of being 11 months old. And wow, has the time flown by. I don't know where it's been. I can't believe he's going to be a year old in a month and a week. Where'd the time go? But on past episodes, you know I've mentioned that he likes music. And in the last, about a month, I've really noticed how much he likes music. Because it's not just, oh, he likes music, you know, toys make music and radios and television, whatever. No, it's true music. If there's music playing on the computer, or a television theme song comes on, or the underscoring for a scene in a movie or a television show, or even the end theme of TV shows, he snaps his head towards the television, or towards the source of the sound, really, and pays attention acutely. He is tuned into it. Everything else has stopped, and he doesn't break his concentration. Well, sometimes he does, because he's, you know, 11 months old. But usually he is very focused on whatever the songs are. And just to share with you, the listeners, some of the shows that he really seems to enjoy: Jake and the Neverland Pirates, that's a kid show, and it's fun. Blue's Clues, classic there. Wonder Pets, which is, I never knew existed until Drew came along. It's a fun little show. Busytown Mysteries, based on the Richard Scarry characters. Of course, I've mentioned in the past Into the Woods by Stephen Sondheim. He just adores that. And then general theme music. My wife Rebecca and I, Rebecca being a past guest, season 1, episode 21, we'll be watching television and he'll snap his head to the themes of many popular shows such as Eureka, Bones, Law and Order, Family Guy, Star Trek, really any of the Star Treks, American Dad, and really any true music. And he really is interested in the extreme complex music, like the Sondheim Into the Woods, not simple little ditties that come on some of his toys. I mean, it makes him happy, but I don't see him paying that much attention to the music that comes from his toys versus something that's from the computer or television. It's amazing. And so going on the proud dad side for a moment, I really am excited to watch and see how his love of music grows and evolves. You know, is he going to be just an appreciator of music? Or is he going to venture out and maybe play an instrument? Only time will tell. All right, time for random segment part deux.
Wow!
My wife is still breastfeeding our son, and so she came across a recipe on the internet for lactation cookies. It's to help build your supply. Okay, fine, no problem. Give me the list. I'll go get the ingredients. And so I went to the general supermarket. I'm not going to name any names, but it's a large national chain, and I went there and I asked for it, and they didn't have it. And so I went to a large national drugstore chain, and they didn't have it. So finally I went to a pretty national, how should I say, the natural organic store. And in those three different stores, not only did they not have the product, and it was one item that I was looking for, and that is brewer's yeast. Pretty common item. It's a nutritional supplement. But all three of the stores, every time I asked for it, I got that look of, huh? What do you mean? I've never heard that. That doesn't sound right. I don't think that exists. And in all three of the stores, well, actually two of the stores, there was a grab the manager, ask this person, do we have it? Search the store, do we have it? And nothing. In the third store, I walked up to the clerk and they answered in a very short, no, we don't carry that. And I went, okay, fine. I finally found it across the street at the national organic health food store competitor, and it worked out. But the point is, all of these customer service representatives acted as if what I was asking for was the most ridiculous thing in the world. It's like I walked up and said, excuse me, do you know where I could find the toasted garlic slugs? Not that I would want to buy that anyway, but you get the point. And I couldn't understand why they would act as if I was the crazy person not knowing what I was asking for. I just don't get it sometimes, you know? It's PodGod cross-promotion time. Being a member of the PodGods Network, we play bumpers from other shows, just like they play ours. So for this episode, we have fellow PodGod...
Excuse me, Charlie.
Oh, hello, Reggie.
Reginald.
I'm sorry, Reginald. I didn't expect you to show up.
Well, ever since the first episode of Season 2, your anniversary show, I've taken over editing and producing the show, remember?
Of course I remember, Reginald. How could I forget?
Well, it seems that we've received some feedback from our wonderful fans and listeners, and the general response is that the PodGod promos that we play, how should I say this, are a bit too racy and explicit.
Really? Our fans have been saying that.
Unfortunately, yes.
Well, most podcasts out there in the world aren't as family-friendly as ours.
Yes, I am aware of that, which is why I am bringing it to your attention.
I see. Well, playing the cross-promotional bumpers is part of the agreement I have with Adam Barker and the PodGods Network, so what do you suggest we do?
Well, to keep our program family-friendly and clean, as you stated on iTunes, I suggest that we provide our own cross-promotion for the PodGods Network. That way you can keep up your commitment with the Pod Gods and maintain our family-friendly quality of programming.
So then, Mr. Producer, what do you suggest I do?
Inform our listeners of the Pod Gods website and the other programs available.
Oh, well, okay. The website is podgodsnetwork.com, and the other wonderful Pod God programs you'll find there are GarageCast, A Little Punch Drunk, The Monday Movie Show, Oddcast Podcast, Salty Language, Evil Teddy Bear Podcast, Dirty Rotten Show, Ticks and Cider, MovieCom, BUI Podcast, that's Blogging Under the Influence, Get Into Character, Clutch and Wiggle, We Love Movies, It's Not Soccer Podcast, 7 Days a Geek, Anti-Semantic Show, Following the Nerd, Jellyfielders, Two Funny Girls, Zombie Life Podcast, The Unsocial Network, Panic Stations, Pod God Damn It, Chasing Greedo, Canuck Cast, Final Shot Saloon Podcast, Ask an American Podcast, Google Goddess Live, Mr. Mix Mixtape, and of course, The Random Variety Show. So, will that suffice, Mr. Producer?
I do believe it will.
Excellent. Visit PodGodsNetwork.com for more information about those shows. There it is. Longtime listeners know that's the theme to Groucho's Corner here on the Random Variety Show. Now, if you're listening for the very first time, again, thank you so much for listening, but after this episode, I highly suggest that you visit randomvarietyshow.com or iTunes and listen to, well, you actually have a choice. You could listen to the prequel episode, Season 1, Episode 00, or you could listen to the anniversary show, Season 2, Episode 1. Why? Well, both of those episodes contain my conversation with Groucho Marx, and you'll find out why he's on the podcast. But in a nutshell, I was cruising around the internet looking for somebody to interview, and I stumbled across the disembodied voice of Groucho Marx, who graciously accepted to be on my podcast. Now, this interview with Mark Hershon was recorded on February 6, 2013. And if you're not familiar with the Succotash Comedy Podcast format, what it is Mark really plays clips from other comedy podcasts. I mean, he has interviews with comics and friends of his and things like that and commentaries and such, but mostly it's built upon the clips. So, in a twist of events, I'm going to play clips from Succotash's show here, so you can get a taste of it. Now, the first one I'm going to play for you is actually my first appearance, well, a mention for the Random Variety Show's first appearance on Succotash. And the cool thing about this particular clip is Mark also mentions Ed Wallach, who runs Don't Quit Your Daycast podcast. And funny enough, Ed's going to be a future guest.
I really wanted to thank our loyal listener and friend of the show, Ed Wallach, one of the first listeners to reach out to us originally. Probably one of the first people to actually throw anything into the tweet sack to begin with. And he is also the first person. We have to have some sort of special fanfare or something for this. He's the first person to donate to Succotash. There you go, Ed. Thank you so much. So far, the first and only person to actually click the donate button and send us a few shekels. So thank you. And not only that, Ed has also been inspired to start his own podcast. So hopefully we will retain him as a loyal listener now that he is producing Don't Quit Your Daycast. And I have promised Ed that once he gets a few episodes under his belt, and once we get a few belts under our belt, we will play a clip from Don't Quit Your Daycast. But in the meantime, go ahead and support him. Go check him out at don'tquityourdaycast.com. And he's also up on iTunes. And I want to shout out to another loyal listener, another friend of the show, Charlie Miller, who has also recently taken the wraps off of his own podcast. So you can catch the Random Variety Show in its infancy over on Blogspot. The URL is so long, just throw Random Variety Show into Google and it will pop up. So good luck with the podcast, Charlie, and we will get a clip from you soon.
Well, that was the first mention of the Random Variety Show on Succotash back in the day when I was using Blogspot. I'm so glad we've grown since then. One of the elements of Succotash is their faux sponsor, Henderson's Pants. And I'm going to play a sample for you now.
Friends, for years, Henderson's Pants has been saying that we offer stylish lower body wear for every member of your family. Well, it's time to come clean. That hasn't been exactly truthful. Sure, Henderson's offered pants for mom and dad, brother and sister, even baby. But what about Fido and Fluffy, the dogs and cats of this great country? Aren't they members of the family too, you ask? Well, they are now. With Henderson's Pet Pants, your favorite furry friend doesn't have to be bare-assing around the house any longer. With more colors and fabrics than you can fetch a stick with, pets now have no excuse not to be putting on the dog or cat when it comes to stepping out in style. And Henderson's Pet Pants are not just limited to your pooch or pussy. Birds, fish, lizards, we are complete petophiles at Henderson's, and we have just the pant no matter what your companion's persuasion. Whether you want to see your Dalmatian in denim or your Persian in petal pushers, we've got it. That squawking cockatiel in corduroy, goldfish in gold lamé, or Komodo dragon in khaki, oh, we've got it. Henderson's can even lock your livestock up in stylish trousers. Imagine Porky's ham hocks in herringbone, or your frisky llama in linen. We've got that too. Originally designed for petting zoos, furry conventions, and the Bohemian Grove, Henderson's Pet Pants are now available, truly for the first time, for the entire family. That's Henderson's, makers of fine trousers and pantaloons since 1896, and now back to Succotash.
I wonder how we could get Henderson's Pants to sponsor us here on the Random Variety Show. The commercials for Henderson's Pants is one of the reasons I love to keep listening to the show. Now, since Mark plays clips from other podcasts, he doesn't have a lot of time to search for these clips, so he asks people to send in clips. Well, I kind of took a twist on that and made my own variety of it, something that wasn't expected, something, dare I say, random. And this is how it came across on the show.
Next up is our buddy Charlie Miller from the Random Variety Show podcast. Now, normally I don't really play promos, but Charlie bookended his clip with just about the right amount of setup and pluggage that, you know what, I'm just going to let it roll. Take it away, Charlie.
Hello, Mark and Succotash listeners. This is Charlie from the Random Variety Show podcast. In Season 2, Episode 6 of my show, fans and friends on Facebook got together and sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, put together a story. And I took all that text, recorded it, put some sound effects to it, some music to it, and came up with this.
Once upon a time, there was a young man named Philip. He was a very proud member of a distinguished family. The family was famous for their silk scarf-making company. Their scarves were so famous due to the special left-handed silkworms that spun the silk to make them. But the trouble with left-handed silkworms is that they have to use special left-handed knitting needles, and, wouldn't you know it, the leftorium was fresh out of them.
Why?
Philip knew that if the family's precious left-handed silkworms couldn't get their special tiny left-handed knitting needles, the scarf-making business would falter. The worms had tried the regular knitting needles, but kept spraining their tiny wrists. There just had to be somewhere to get those left-handed needles, other than the always out-of-stock leftorium.
Why?
But where? Philip would need some serious brain power to solve this riddle. Knowing that left-handed people are the only people in the right mind, Philip sought the advice of the most powerful lefty in the world, Barack Obama.
Huh?
This created quite a conundrum for even the highly accomplished Barack, as he came to terms with the fact that even if the right-handed knitting needles were modified for the perplexed silkworms, they would still present the problem of only producing right-handed silk.
Oh, no!
Furthering the complexity of the issue for the commander-in-chief, he could actually purchase the correct knitting needles online through a custom order website, but the needles themselves would be manufactured in Kabul, Afghanistan. Also, the president felt that the issue of not paying taxes for the product online, as it was an out-of-state purchase, might send the wrong signal to any young, idealistic American silkworms who were especially interested in this issue. Unfortunately, the worms couldn't see, therefore, unable to realize that wormish behavior not only poisons the left and the right, but the up and down and the in-between, resulting in the death of a grove. So that's a little taste of the Facebook story adventure that was created. Go back to iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or randomvarietyshow.com. Listen to Season 2, Episode 6 for the rest of the story. Thanks, Mark, Bill, Kenny, and Joe. This is Charlie Miller saying, remember to pass the succotash.
Boy, that saved me a whole lot of work. By the way, I will be appearing as a guest sometime this month on Charlie's Random Variety Show podcast, interviewed by Groucho Marx. I cannot wait for that.
This is Groucho Marx from the Random Variety Show podcast, and you're listening to Succotash, the comedy podcast. Do I have to say it both times?
All right, so there's a sample of Succotash with a little bit of Random Variety Show mixed in for you. All right, enough of that. Let's get into the interview. As I mentioned before, it was recorded February 6, 2013. Now, we did experience a few Skype hiccups, but, you know, it is what it is, and it came out okay, I think. All right, enough of that. Let's get on our way. Mark, Groucho, take it away.
Hello, and welcome to Groucho's Corner. Today we have a, I'm not too sure how to introduce this gentleman. He's, dare I say, a man for all seasons. He's a writer, he's a, radio producer, a podcaster, a professional brander, an improv teacher. He used to work in a comedy club booking acts, a cartoonist, and an ordained minister. Please welcome to the show none other than Succotash's own Mark Hershon. Mark, welcome to this program.
Thank you, Groucho. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been champing at the bit, waiting for an invitation to come on the Random Variety Show, and I'm delighted and honored.
Well, I'm glad you're honored, because if you weren't honored, I don't know who would be. Yes, it's been quite a scheduling conflict to get you on the show, and I'm actually going to blame Charlie's son for that, because I can.
Well, you know, I've heard some rumors about his son, so I'm not surprised that he's the cause for all this.
Well, at least the rumors are, or I hope the rumors are good.
Oh, they're good. They're good. But until you just said that, I realized they were rumors. Now they've been confirmed. So thank you.
Oh, I confirmed them. Well, that's a good thing then. All right. Well, let's talk about what seems to be your first forte is writing. How did that strike you? How did you get into that?
I guess I've always had sort of a penchant for writing. My first real opportunity, I wrote a couple of ideas for screenplays with some friends. We had no idea what we were doing, you know, when we were in high school. I used to write some radio plays, actually. So it's kind of funny that I'm in the podcasting business. But even before I got into radio as a broadcaster, when I was in high school, there was an opportunity. There was a guy who was trying to resurrect quadraphonic sound, which I don't even know if you're familiar with that. But
I've heard of it. I'm not that out of it.
It was the wave of the future at one point that was going to, you know, knock stereo aside and take the world by storm. And there was this guy who wanted to try and make it a real sensation. So he thought if he could have some audio plays that would really capture that idea of surround sound for coming out of your stereo receiver or your quad receiver, he could really sell it. So a buddy of mine and I got hired not just to write these scripts, but to perform them as well. And the whole thing crashed and burned, but it really did give me a taste for how to write a script. You know, they weren't very good, but they were good enough for what we were trying to do. And from there, I got the opportunity to write a screenplay with kind of one of my comedic heroes, a comic by the name of Franklin Ajayi, who was a stand-up comic, started in the 70s, and was one of the first real kind of entrepreneurial comics, and that he put out three comedy albums before 1979. Hey. And they were big college hits. He was kind of an edgy guy, still is. People might remember him. He had a role in the movie Car Wash.
Ah, the one with, what is that, George Carlin and Richard Pryor.
That's right. If you remember the character The Fly, he was the kid with the giant afro who kept trying to win the radio station contest.
I do remember that. I do. I really do.
That's Franklin. He's been in a number of other movies and TV shows and things like that. But anyway, he was headlining the comedy club that I was running in Seattle, Washington. I don't know. Every time I say Seattle, I always put Washington, even though I don't believe there's another Seattle on the face of the earth, which is weird.
That is very strange, considering how many Springfields there are.
34. There's 34 of them. I've counted.
Really? You would, too.
Yeah. But anyway, so Franklin and I came up with this idea for a movie while he was headlining. We were driving around one day with nothing to do, and we wrote up this idea. It was like a 5-page handwritten outline. And he took it back to Los Angeles and called me the next week and said, hey, there's these producers who want to buy this story. And I said, well, okay, how much do they want to buy our story for? He said, we could probably get like $5,000.
And that's a lot of bread back then.
Yeah, we're talking like 1983. I said, oh, well, send me my $2,500. I'm ready. He says, I think we could write this screenplay. He didn't seem daunted by the fact that neither he nor I had ever written a screenplay before, either together or separately. So
jump in feet first, it seems.
That's what I did. So I took a couple of days off. I went to Los Angeles. He introduced me to these three producers that wanted to kind of band together on the project. They took it to a meeting at Universal. And after jumping through a few hoops, we ended up with a development deal for the screenplay. And they ended up paying about, I think it was in the end, like about $60,000. And the movie never got produced, but it was quite exciting. And it almost got produced. It was a time travel comedy, and it's a fairly long story. But the long story short, if Back to the Future hadn't gotten made, ours was the one on the back burner.
You know, in learning a little bit about Back to the Future, I did remember there was a number of scripts competing for that sci-fi time travel piece in the 80s there.
Well, you may, if kind of the box set, that you'll know the story that the original star of Back to the Future was Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz, that's right. Didn't they have like 6 weeks filmed and in the can before they fired him and brought back Michael J. Fox?
They did. And while that movie was down, because they go, well, they didn't have Michael J. Fox in mind. They just knew they had to get rid of Eric Stoltz because it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the frantic call to come rewrite our movie, and they wouldn't tell us why. Nobody knew Back to the Future was in production. Nobody knew about it. But we were told certain things to change our script so it wouldn't conflict with that script, we found out later on. They had, if Michael J. Fox hadn't gone on hiatus at the time he did from Family Ties, and they said, well, let's try him, then our movie was next in line to get up on its feet. So
that's kind of like going for the brass ring and just having short arms.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
Well, at least you're able to cash a check, right?
I cashed a check. I got in the Writers Guild. I got bitten by the writer's bug. So it certainly did a job on getting me into the industry, which was fantastic. And I used those short little arms to applaud all three of the Back to the Future movies, which I actually really ended up enjoying.
They are quite a something, aren't they? They're really a spectacle.
They are indeed. And I'm a huge time travel fan. So that's why I was determined if I couldn't get the dang thing made, then I'd at least get to watch something.
Well, at least you did. So what would you say your favorite style of writing is? Screenplays, books? I know you got a book we're going to talk about in a moment, but what would you say your favorite style is? Or sketch comedy, even?
My favorite, well, I think my favorite style of writing is the screenplay. I've sat down to write fiction books on a number of occasions, and it's really hard work. I mean, the book that I did get published, it's a business book, and it's really sort of an advice kind of book.
And that's the I Hate People.
I Hate People. Trying to write a fiction book is really, really hard. And every time I would get about, oh, I don't know, maybe 30 pages into it, I go, you know what? I could write this entire thing in a week as a first draft of a screenplay and at least see what it looks like. So I'd end up doing that. And then I'd end up optioning that or selling that. And I'd go, well, I guess that book's not going to happen.
Now, would you say that's because of the, I don't want to say less detail, but in a fiction book, you've got all the elaborate explanation of the scene, the location, the location of the sun, the birds are tweeting and all that. You don't have so much in a screenplay. Would you say that's one of the reasons why you like screenplaying, writing?
It's sort of like being an architect and designing a house, because you know that the story you're writing is going to be handed over to a contractor, otherwise known as a director, and he's going to build the house that he wants to build using your script as a guideline. So you almost don't want to put too much detail in it. And I've seen it happen before, even with my own projects. If I ladle too much detail into those pages, oftentimes directors can't develop the vision for themselves. They get so trapped in what's on the page that they just end up passing. They go, well, it sounds like a good story, but I don't see what I can really do to really kind of bring it to life. Everything's right here.
So even though everything's basically handed to them, they turn it down.
In some cases, it depends on the director, but I think, you know, they kind of want to be handed a box of paints and a sketch and say, okay, see if you can make a painting out of this.
So they have more creative input then.
I believe so, yeah.
And I've also noticed you write for the Huffington Post, or at least there's a few articles there from you. How'd you get into that thing? That's not even screenwriting.
It's not screenwriting. That was actually related to the I Hate People book. When the book was coming out, one of the things that our publisher, Little Brown, did was they got me and my writing partner, Jonathan Lippman, they got us, however it worked, I have no idea, they got us vetted to be bloggers on Huffington Post. And all of a sudden, we just got mailed these passwords to the backstage area. And we started blogging stuff about about the things that were going to be in our book. And once the book came out, we blogged about all sorts of things in the world of business that dealt with dealing with difficult people, which is what the core of the book is about. And since then, I've used it to blog about friends' movies and blog about friends' albums. I'm not a professional reviewer, so I figured, well, no one else is going to write about this movie that's in a film festival. I'll write about it.
And it gives them more exposure that way. That's a very nice way of giving back.
It does.
So talk to a little bit more about this I Hate People. I mean, how much do you really hate people to write a book called I Hate People?
Well, that's a very good question. It is a phrase that I tend to use a lot because people do kind of drive me crazy. I don't really hate people, but I do really get tired of people's behavior.
I was just going to say, could that be along the lines of George Carlin? He hates crowds of people, but the individual is okay?
I would definitely agree with that. I would definitely agree with that. And this book specifically, it started out as it was going to be just a general humor book. But as we put the proposal together, John and I, Little Brown reacted to the proposal and said, well, you know what's selling really good right now, or really well, is business books. So if you guys could reshape this into a business-oriented sort of how-to book, we'd be very interested in picking it up. So we said, all right, let's think about it. So we thought about it. We figured out how to kind of jiggle some things around and make it about business. We had to do a lot of interviews with people in business and create a whole new idea of what the baseline of the book was. And then, of course, the book came out in 2009. This was 2008. We were given this great advice about how well business books are doing. And then the bottom fell out of everything.
And great timing.
Yeah, when our book came out, it was like, well, business books aren't moving quite as well as we thought they were going to, but we're selling some. But it was a great experience. My writing partner on the book, John, had written a number of books before. He's a sports journalist. He's written for Playboy magazine extensively about things like Barry Bonds, Lance Armstrong, things like that. And he's written some business books that people are familiar with, things like he collaborated with Tom Kelly and wrote The Art of Innovation and The 10 Faces of Innovation. And so this book was a departure for him, the I Hate People book. He had a lot of fun doing it with me. And we ended up, we got to do the audio version of the book ourselves, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, I'll bet that was. And well, being a podcaster, that kind of went right into fit like a glove, I'm sure.
Six years of radio experience as well, so that certainly helped out. And then the book's been translated into 7 languages and sold in countries around the world, so that's pretty fun too. In fact, I just did an interview a couple of weeks ago with an online magazine in Brazil. So that was fascinating. They just sent me some email questions, and I answered it, and then everything was in Portuguese. I couldn't read a word.
So you just answered what you wanted to answer then?
The questions I got were in English, and I answered in English, and then they just translated everything I had to say back into Portuguese. So the only thing I really could make out was my own name, which, you know, that's good enough for me.
It's exposure. That's what counts. So what about these faux doodles I've been hearing about? This is your own style of cartooning. How did this come about in your wonderful world of things that you do?
Well, I was a classic cartoonist, hand-drawn cartoons for years. I used to draw for a college newspaper and my high school newspaper and various comedy publications along the way. And then a fellow that I'd done some work with in comedy production lived in Half Moon Bay, California, which is about 30 miles south of San Francisco. And he was doing cartoons for the local paper down there, a weekly paper called the Half Moon Bay Review. And he was just – he couldn't draw a lick, but he came up with these great ideas. And so he had a collaborator in Half Moon Bay who ended up moving away. And we ran into each other. He knew I'd done cartoons because we'd worked on the same comedy publication. He asked if I wanted to collaborate. And I said, I'm happy to. I know nothing about Half Moon Bay, but I'm happy to whatever you want me to.
Hey, it's a job.
He would email me his ideas. I was living on the other side of San Francisco across the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County. And he would send me his ideas. We'd talk on the phone so I'd really get an idea of what he sort of saw in his mind visually. And then I would draw up these cartoons, scan them, and he would put the captions on them and deliver them to the newspaper. It was kind of an arduous process. And then he unfortunately suffered a fatal heart attack about 7 years ago. Unfortunately, he went into a coma for about a week, and I got a call from the publisher of the paper who asked whether I'd heard about what had happened to Bob. His name was Bob Lacey, very well regarded in the comedy community here in San Francisco. And I said, yes, of course, I'd heard about it, and I was terribly sorry, and hopefully he'll pull through, which he unfortunately did not. She called me back and said, is there any chance you guys had actually done a cartoon for this week's paper before this happened?
Oh, wow. Got a deadline to meet.
In this case. And I said, as a matter of fact, we had done one. So I sent that along to her. And she called me up the following week and said, is there any way you can keep doing the cartoons? Because otherwise I have to subscribe to some sort of syndication service and it's really hard. And these cartoons were, you know, really specifically for Half Moon Bay. And I said, yeah, I think I can, except the fact I literally know nothing about Half Moon Bay. Bob gave me everything I ever knew. She said, well, why don't you come down and I'll show you around and kind of tell you what the politics are like and things like that. And so sort of working hand in hand with her and then the new editor who started working for her, I kept doing the cartoons, but I was getting tired of doing hand-drawn cartoons. And I had started to, even working with Bob, come up with this way to use Photoshop to make sort of photo collages look like hand-drawn cartoons. I would take six or seven pieces, a different head, a different body, and meld them all together and make them look like a piece of art, basically, that may have been hand-drawn.
Oh, okay. So there's a style of the piece.
And so that's how the Faux Doodles were born. And I've been doing that ever since. And then ended up marrying the publisher of the newspaper. So,
really? Do tell.
We are now married for out for 8 years and got married almost 3 years ago now. And we're quite happy, even though she has to bear the ignominy of having married a cartoonist.
Well, I'm sure she just introduces you as Mark, not Mark the cartoonist.
Exactly.
So now, since you don't know anything about Half Moon Bay unless you get it from your wife, where do those ideas come up? Where do you come up with those ideas?
I eventually moved to Half Moon Bay, so I was smack dab in the middle of this sort of half agricultural, half business community, because it's just over the hill from Silicon Valley. So all the well-heeled folks want to get out of, the metropolis. So they all live in this very bucolic farmland area. And so there was always this butting of heads of people that had been there, you know, for generations of farmers. And then these people that were the nouveau riche, with their family homes. So there was always plenty of grit. Cartoonist's mill. Now, she ended up retiring from her job as publisher about a year ago, and we moved back to Marin so I could pursue my my full-time job back crafting brand names. I still do cartoons for the paper, even though she's no longer the publisher, and she's about to start a new job as a assistant publisher for a magazine. So,
well, congratulations for the new position, and congratulations on 8 years.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And nice segue you did. I was just going to ask about Lexicon. Tell us about that. You make up brand names.
It's probably the most, I like saying it's the most fascinating cocktail party conversation starter you could possibly have, is the idea that you create, people don't even suspect such a job exists. It started out in the realm of advertising agencies, and they would do it as a favor, basically, for, you know, clients. Coca-Cola would go to their agency and say, hey, we've got this new soft drink. We're trying to come up with a name for it. And, you know, because they're paying them millions of dollars as an ad agency, they go, well, we'll come up with a name for you. But that was probably up until about 1980. And then the legal hassle of getting an international trademark cleared that no one else is using, that you can then protect, has become so arduous and so difficult that people like David Plasek, who started Lexicon, he'd been working at an ad agency, saw this gap in the marketplace and said, I bet you I could start a company where all we do is create the name. And he's been going strong for 30 years. And I started with him as basically a freelance namer about 23 years ago, and have worked for him on a freelance basis and on a part-time basis and then full-time. And I took hiatus off when I started selling some movies to the Hallmark Channel and really focusing on my writing, but went back about 3 years ago. And I'm now the creative director for Lexicon Branding and have had a hand in naming some of the best-known names in the world, including the BlackBerry and Swiffer and Dasani, the Subaru Outback, the Pentium microprocessor, the PowerBook from Apple.
Hmm.
List kind of goes on and on.
Now, do you also design the logos, or is it just the name?
Is, if you can believe it, just a business that comes up with the name.
And then they find somebody else to make the artwork.
Yeah, and sometimes we will work in conjunction with an agency to a design firm to do the logo with the name together, but that's pretty rare. I mean, usually what happens is the name is the very last thing that these major corporations think of. It's amazing. They'll work on a project for years, and then they'll come to us and say, we have 3 weeks to come up with a name before we're going to introduce this at a big show. And it's
nothing like procrastination.
That people, you know, they're willing to spend millions of dollars, sometimes billions of dollars, developing a name or developing a product, and then just in the 11th hour say, boy, we better come up with a name for this thing that's really going to, you know, not only be legally available, but it's really going to make a mark out there in the world.
Well, you say it's a great job, but with deadlines like that, it sounds like it would be kind of stressful.
It can get stressful at times, but there's the excitement for me. I've always been an early adopter in terms of like high tech and things like that. And this is about the early adoption you can do. I got to play with a PowerBook from Apple, which was, you know, they had a portable Macintosh, which was a weight about 25 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
When they first came out with the PowerBook, which at the time probably weighed, I'm going to say, 4.5 pounds, the first one. We got to play with the very first one a year and a half before it ever saw the light of day. You know, there's very stringent NDAs that we have to sign, and we see some of the most amazing technology that literally the world will never see, because it's amazing the projects we've worked on that the company that's working on it will say, you know what, it's just not going to be cost effective to introduce this thing, and it goes away.
But then you say, but it's so cool.
Exactly.
People are going to love this. Why are you taking it away? It sounds like the Fox Network.
I think it's a very good way to put it. Exactly.
So what were some of your favorite brands? I mean, you listed a few there, but there's got to be a golden nugget somewhere that was just something you really, really enjoyed working on.
Well, I'll tell you, the BlackBerry name was one of my favorites, just because it was, again, it was very early technology. This was before there was a phone. Their device was actually about the size of a pager, but it had a tiny little keyboard on it. And the idea was you could use it to retrieve your email from your desktop computer.
Mm.
Fascinating. I've done a couple of brand names out on my own when I was in between my stints at Lexicon that I'm still quite proud of. The Nuvi, which is a GPS device from Garmin Industries.
You know, Charlie has one of those.
Well, I hope he's very happy with it, because I loved working on that project, and I've got three of them myself. Love doing that work. You may be familiar with Crackle, which is Sony's online network. They show movies and TV episodes. I named that that service, the Crackle service. They bought it from a small company called Grouper. The site was called Grouper. It was a kind of a YouTube wannabe. They were centered here in Marin County. And Sony wanted an infrastructure they could buy and take over, but they hated the name Grouper. And so I got hired.
Makes you think of a fish.
Exactly. And they did not want to buy that. So part and parcel of the sales deal was you guys have to rename it. And the fellow that ran that startup knew me from a couple of projects we'd worked on. And so ended up calling it Crackle, and Sony was very happy.
Mm. Now, let's go to the other end of the spectrum. What brands did you work on that you just really hated? That you can speak about?
I'd be happy to speak. If I could remember them, it's usually, let me think if I can think of one as I'm telling you that, usually what happens is that we, you know, the client will say, well, which of the names that you're presenting to us do you like? And we'll tell them the names we like. And then, you know, we show names across the spectrum and a client may see 60, 70, 100 names and we'll develop 2000 names. Show them are very select. And we show them across a broad spectrum. Some of those are really just designed to flesh out a spectrum. And we say to ourselves, well, hopefully the client will not pick these. I mean, they're either really dull or they just, you know, they don't have much life to them. But, you know, we'll show them the spectrum. And sometimes that's the one they'll gravitate to, you know. If you work in the entertainment business, and oftentimes it's the vanilla pudding that's the vote because it doesn't offend anybody.
Exactly. They want to go right in the middle.
Make anybody terribly excited, but it doesn't offend anybody. Sometimes that'll happen. And while I'm saying that, I'm trying to remember, you know, a name that's horrible. And I don't know that we've done names that were horrible. I think the only thing would probably be boring. Would be the only real bad thing. And darn if I could think of one that stood the test of time long enough that if I said it, anybody would know it. I mean, there was a cereal we did years ago for General Mills, and it had three different kinds of grains in it. And the name they ended up going with was Triples. We showed it to them, and it had three P's in the name to represent the three different grains. And to me, it seemed really trite. And it's not out there anymore. I mean, that's the problem with a name, or not the problem, but that's probably the good thing about a forgettable name. The product is oftentimes equally forgettable.
Excuse me, Groucho.
Well, hello, Reggie. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Hello, Mark. Sorry to interrupt the interview here, but it is time for Charlie to come on in and say his part.
Oh, he's coming in now. All right, well, I'll take his back burner and let him come in. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I think get here in time for the interview.
Well, hey, you know, taking care of Drew, that's my son, and, you know, trying to balance everything out and get the Skype set up for Groucho and Reggie and all that, so just kind of make it in here. I had to beg with my producer, Reggie, to let me actually talk to you about the Succotash podcast, because... Well, you know, not to put you on a pedestal or, you know, go all, you know, gaga star-eyed or anything like that, but, you know, listening to your podcast in the very beginning, you had just started and I was really just about ready to drop my first episode. You were the frosting on the cake that said, hey, I can do this. I know I can do this. And so I want to express to you on the show, thank you so much. And thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. When I started hearing from you and you were saying, yeah, I'm really getting excited about starting my own podcast, it harkened back to when I was in junior high school. I used to listen to this radio station in San Francisco, and I'd listen at night, you know, with a speaker, one of those pillow speakers underneath my pillow because I was supposed to be asleep.
I did that too. I did it to the Dr. Demento show.
station would play between 11 and midnight. They played an hour of old radio shows, and then they played an hour of comedy records. And I was in junior high school, and I just loved listening to these shows at night. And by the time I got halfway through junior college, I ended up going to work for the very station I used to listen to.
And wow.
The guy who was the nighttime guy when I was listening had become the morning drive guy, and I ended up as his producer. And so it was this full circle thing. So the idea that you were listening to my show and you were prepping your own show, and that I kind of helped you say to yourself, wow, if that guy can do a show, God, I should be able to do one.
Well, it wasn't you doing the show. It was some of the clips you were playing, you know, because you gave such a barrage of clips. I mean, Larry Miller and Greg Proops and all those big name stars, you know, Chris Hardwick. And then you got the little podcasts, and I'm drawing a blank on some of them right now, but you know the ones I'm talking about.
Sure, it's those podcasts from people you'd never heard of before. Everything from the Anti-Semantic Show to
that's one.
The Mustache Rangers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's one. And then there's the Oddcast podcast, I think, and part of the Pod Gods. I know that's kind of you're influential into there somewhere. Clutch and Wiggle.
Wiggle and the Pod Mafia, made up of people like the D-Head Factor out of Australia, and Royal and Doodle out of England, and the G&J Show from Belfast, Ireland. I mean, it's an amazing spread. It's like radio is never like this. And so you're right. It's influential, but it is inspirational to hear. There's no barrier to getting onto a podcast. And as long as you've got a will to do it, there's nothing to hold you back. It's a fantastic medium, and I think it's only just started to really kind of find its footing.
I think it's fledgling. It just started. I mean, it's been around for a good decade, and there's almost millions of shows out there, but it's still developing.
Oh, absolutely.
So now, because you just passed your year on Succotash not too long ago, what would you say your most favorite moment would be for that show? Would you think it'd be one of the clips that you've played, or one of the bits that you do with Bill, or or Kenny from the booth, or one of your guests? What would be your favorite spot so far?
Well, there's so many highlights. I'm fortunate enough to be friends with Dana Carvey, who people will know from Saturday Night Live and Wayne's World and whatnot. And he lives here in the area. And my third show, he goes, "Hey, I'll come on your show." I kind of didn't even ask him. He just wanted to do it.
Oh, really? Wow. Because I remember listening to that episode. That was a great episode. That one and your Rick Overton interview were two in the beginning, two of my favorites.
Again, is one of my oldest friends. He and I optioned a screenplay years ago, and we've been friends for over 20 years. And so those people are easy gets for me. It's delightful to get them on and let people hear, because I think I can take their interview a place that no kind of standard interviewer will do, because I know those guys.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think one of my favorite moments I laughed the hardest at was I had Phil Lernes on as a guest co-host this last year. He does a show with Dean Haglund called The Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And he happened to be up in the Bay Area. His folks live in Silicon Valley. He grew up in San Jose. And so I said, "Hey, why don't you come up? You can come to Studio P and co-host the show with me." He says, "Oh, that would be great." So he comes up, and Joe is in the booth, my producer. And we're going to do a Boozin' with Bill episode. And he goes, "This is so exciting. I mean, I love the Boozin' with Bill episodes. I can hardly wait to meet Bill." And Joe and I kind of look at each other in the glass. And so we get to the Bill segment, and I go, "It's time for Boozin' with Bill." Except, I never announce it. It's just Bill comes stumbling into the studio.
Right. I think that's one of the best bits.
And so Phil watches as Joe leaves the board and comes through the door and assumes the character of Bill Haywatt.
Get out of town.
And his jaw just drops. And we had created such a perfect fiction that anybody thought it was a different character, a different person. So that was amazing. That was a delightful moment.
That's great. Well, let's look at the other side. What would you say would be your most upsetting moment? I know you lost a hard drive, and you had your hard drive fund to save the hard drive drive, and that was great. So I know that must have set you back a little bit. But any other moments where you just kind of went, "Oh,
I had some interviews on there, yeah, that I'll never get back again, which is a shame. I recorded an interview with a good friend of mine in Los Angeles. I can reproduce the interview with him when I want to, but we really did capture some things. He's a comic and an actor, a guy named Brant von Hoffman. He's been in a bunch of stuff, including the first three Police Academy movies. I recorded this interview at his place in L.A., and I was using my my iPhone, which is always quite trustworthy. And so I have to say it was something having to do with user error, but by my place in LA and went to transfer it over to the computer, the interview was just gone. And again,
I feel your pain,
but there's just moments. Oh, I'll never be able to get him to talk about again, just cause I'll forget the questions I had that led to those. So that's painful. And the other painful thing, and this is ongoing, is the rush to get the show out. I mean, I scramble to get clips every, and I have to say, I wish I could do the shows more justice. I wish I could say, I listened to your last five episodes and now I'm ready to pull a clip. I go online. I look for people that are following me on Twitter from podcasts that I've never heard of before. I'll go listen to their show. I'll look at the Stitcher Top 100, who's up there that I haven't played yet. I'll look for famous comics that are just now getting into podcasting. In fact, Rick Overton just started his own podcast. So I'll look for that. But I will scramble to go, okay, I just need 3.5 minutes out of this thing. So I literally will pull it up on Audacity, for those who are podcasters or familiar with some of these names of some of the software we use. And I will look for gaps in the audio where I go, okay, that looks like the start of a bit. And so I'll just start jumping around and try and find a 3 to 5 minute chunk that is representative of the show as best as I can figure it out. So I feel like if you know, an intern or an assistant or somebody helping me do these things, but with the day job and trying to, you know, keep the family going, and I've got two little grandkids that I love playing with, it's just really tough to pull the show together. And I'm not always having access to Studio P. Joe's a busy guy, so I have to kind of fit things into his schedule. So as you've heard on my show, from time to time, I do my show from Studio F, which is my Fiat. And
I've heard some episodes, yes.
I literally will do the wraparounds in my car so I don't disturb anybody in my house late at night. And then I just cobble the whole thing together in GarageBand.
Now, you spoke a little bit about podcasting being a fledgling entertainment venue. Where do you see it going in the next, I mean, what, 5, 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, to some extent, I see it becoming very mainstream because it's just going to be a matter of time before the TV networks, they're not ever going to give up, nor should they. But I think they're going to realize that the money to be made is out here in the of the internet, where you've got millions of people that no longer care what's on their TV screen, except maybe one or two shows that they really like. You know, the evenings of the couch potatoes, while they're still going to be around for a very long time, are slowly giving way to people that go, you know what, I really like hearing Charlie Miller's podcast, and I can listen to it whenever I want to. I'm no longer a slave to that schedule. I can listen to 3 episodes in a row if I want. I can listen to half an episode and listen to the rest next week. It's all up to me. I'm the listener. I call the shots.
That entertainment on demand aspect of it.
Yeah, and I'm seeing more people get into podcasting. A lot of the stuff that's happening on some of the networks, like Earwolf, they're going sort of video and audio with like Comedy Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm. I've heard those names. Yeah, I've listened to Earwolf. I was a fan of the Apple Sisters on their network.
Seeing a conglomeration of podcast networks. It just, you mentioned the Pod Gods. They're not really a network. They're a loose sort of association of shows that sort of all those guys like each other and they like playing their stuff. And I'm sort of an honorary member of the Pod Gods. You know, I'm part of the Pod Mafia, which again is just a bunch of podcasters that like each other. It's not really a network, but there's things like Earwolf and things like Nerdist, which is turning into a huge going concern. You know, I mean, they've got some real money, and they've got TV production, they've got audio, they've got, you know, they're thinking about making movies. So, you know, these things are turning into major entertainment things. So I think podcasting, while I don't ever become its own giant thing, I think it will become part and parcel of what makes a great entertainment package. So if you say you've got a movie coming out, well, there's going to be a podcast devoted to the production of that movie, the back scene, you know, backstage elements of that movie, and then all the way through the release and the release of the DVD or the cable or however that movie is going to be distributed. And the podcast will be part of that package.
Yeah, I see it going that way too. It's the whole entertainment on demand thing is really taking off. You got your Netflix, your Hulu, your podcasts, your video casts, YouTube. I mean, it's all coming that way.
Yeah, we went without cable for about a year and a half. My wife is too much a creature of habit and wants to see her shows on the night that they air. Mm-hmm. But I got her to at least try it for a year and a half, and I was perfectly happy. I mean, you know, once the night of airing goes past, you can watch that show whenever you want to. And all we had was internet, and I had Hulu, and I had my Roku box, and I had my computer, and I had my iPad, and I could watch every show that I enjoyed watching whenever I wanted to watch it and pay a fraction of the cost of what cable's charging.
And my wife and I are in the exact same boat. We pay for internet, but we don't pay for the actual tech cable because of what you just said.
Yeah, yeah. So cable is definitely flat point, and rightly so. I mean, they've been trying to shovel some pretty bad programming down our throat.
Oh, they have. They have. Oh, I don't even want to get into it. I think the thing that I enjoy the most about entertainment on demand is no commercials or just tiny little 30-second spots that are before a video or something, not this whole 5, 6, 7, 10-minute run of commercials.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I think I got to give it back to Groucho. Mark, it was a pleasure. Thank you again, and I'll be talking with you. Say hi to Bill for me.
I'll do it, Charlie. Thank you.
All right, Charlie, get out of here. All right. So now, Mark, I remember in some of your posts, we're going to change gears here. You mentioned that you lost some weight and you were very proud of that. What spawned that? Is it just something that the wife said you got to lose some weight, or you said you wanted to lose some weight?
I wanted to lose weight. I was working on a health and fitness book idea with Dana Carvey, because he's a notorious workout guy. He loves running and working out and doing all this stuff. And so he wanted me to help him sort of organize this idea. And as part of that, he was doing a stint at Weight Watchers. Now, he only had 5 pounds he wanted to lose, really just for television's sake. But I weighed at the time like 280 pounds.
Oh, my.
I said, okay, I'll give it a shot. And on Weight Watchers, I got down to 216 was the lowest I got with Weight Watchers, which was pretty damn good.
Congratulations.
And then in the intervening years, the book idea kind of went away. They, you know, we tried to sell and you know, get an advance, and nobody really was interested. And so over the course of the intervening years, I started to put some weight back on. I got up to about 240, and I had some blood work done and things like that just in the course of having a physical, and my blood pressure was starting to kind of edge up into the high zone. And the doctor said, well, we can put you on, you know, blood pressure medication, or you can try and take some of the weight off first. And if that does the trick, then you don't have to worry about the medication. I said, well, that sounds like the easier thing to do. So I found out my wife had tried this diet plan the year before, and she really liked it. And I said, I'll give that a shot. It's a thing called the ideal protein diet. And it's like always just – you can't find it somewhere. You can't buy the thing. It's protein foods that are it's all administrated by a doctor. So there, every week you go in and they check your fluids, get you up on the rack, you know, and they weigh you. And so I weighed 244 when I first started the program. This was last June. And it's a pretty rigorous program. You really have to stick to it. But if you do, the rewards are forthcoming. And by the end of September, I had lost 45 pounds, and I've kept all that weight off. So I'm very happy with it. I'm literally at the weight now I was at the age of 21.
Well, congratulations. And now I want to talk about you being an ordained minister. I read it on your website there that you did it, and you could marry people. But really, I want to know why. What bug got bit you to go do that?
feel very close to God. No, I don't feel close to God. I feel close to everything. Actually, it all came about because a couple of and they wanted me to do the service. They said, well, we just want it to be light. We're going to be, you know, we're renting out the top half of a restaurant. It's just going to be family and close friends. And we're writing up the whole ceremony. We just want you to do it. I said, well, okay. So I went online. I went to the Universal Life Church website. And for no fee at all, they will ordain you. And then for a modest fee, you actually get a plastic card that says you are Reverend Mark Hirshon. And you get this packet of certificates. And for a little more money, you get a book with various services in it. So I did the first wedding and didn't go for any of the bells or whistles. And I go, hey, this was actually kind of fun. So I got the card and I got the book. And I've now married six couples. And I'm happy to say I'm batting 1,000. They're still all married.
Well, that's good. That's good. And which of these six would be your most favorite ceremony?
I think it was the one I recently put some pictures up on Facebook, and this was Cole Stratton and his wife, Jenny. Cole was a guy that was in my improv group in San Francisco years ago, and he and Jenny were getting married. They asked me to do the ceremony, and they wanted to really have fun with it. So they had the Princess Bride was the theme for their wedding. They had me read Peter Cook's wedding vows from the movie to kick off my vows. And I wore a referee shirt and a whistle, and I had a top hat. And that was probably the most memorable one that I can think of.
Well, do you have any words of wisdom for any upcoming podcasters, writers, actors, radio producers, anything that you've had your hand in and somebody wants to do that, God knows why? What would you tell a young you?
Well, I probably pass on the advice that I've heard Dana Carvey give to people when people say, well, how do I get started in comedy? One thing is if you have to ask, you'll probably never get started in what it is you want to do because that's just sort of a delay. You're trying to gather information and bothering people to tell you how they did. That's all well and good, but he found it rarely led to somebody getting on stage and doing comedy. And I think the same thing sort of holds true. And I think, you know, you and I both discover this in doing it is you could be inspired by hearing people do it, but it's that turning on the switch, grabbing the microphone and just trying it, just doing it, just getting it out there. I mean, as trite as it is, I think Nike's tagline, just do it, is they're words to live by. Once you've done it, you can either say, I hate this, or there's something to this and I'm really going to work at it. But there's no excuse for just not trying it.
Marvelous answer.
And in 3, 2, 1.
And we're rolling? Okay. Hello, listener. It's commercial time again, and you know what that means, right? It's time for me to inform you of how you can support the Random Variety Show. Well, the website is randomvarietyshow.com. That's where you need to go. Everything about the show can be found at randomvarietyshow.com. The easy-to-find Amazon affiliate link is located on the left-hand sidebar, which means that the very next time you want to purchase something from Amazon, go to randomvarietyshow.com first and click on our Amazon link. This will open Amazon in a new tab or window, and you'll be shopping in the blink of an eye. And there are no price differences and no extra fees. In fact, you won't even notice the difference. But we will. Pennies for every dollar you spend through our link come back and support the show. And when I say pennies, I mean pennies, not nickels. You'll also find our affiliate link for Audible.com. Audible is one of the leading suppliers of audio entertainment with over 100,000 titles to choose from. And by using our link or going to audibletrial.com/randomvarietyshow, you get a free audiobook. And we get a small finder's fee. Yeah! So, Reggie, who do I send this off to? You or Charlie?
It's Reginald. My name is Sir Reginald Johnson Walker V.
I'm sorry, Reginald.
Sorry, Reginald.
Thank you. Groucho, hand it off to Charlie as you usually would.
Sure thing, Mr. Walker. Now, Charlie, why don't you share one of these 100,000 titles with our wonderful listeners?
Thanks, Groucho. My Audible suggestion today is I Hate People by Jonathan Littman and Mark Hirshon. Why not? Now, this is available in audio form, but I had the honor and the pleasure of having it shipped to me by the author, Mark Kershon. And I know eventually we are going to cross paths, and when that happens, I'm going to have him sign my copy of I Hate People, Kick Loose from the Overbearing and Underhanded Jerks at Work, and Get What You Want Out of Your Job. So what I'm going to do is read the first page here. I hate people. Where'd we get that idea? We listened. We heard people muttering, I hate people, whenever things would get stressful. Like, every single day. This is not a new problem, and the evidence suggests it's getting worse by the second. Thanks to remarkable advances in technology that have had the unintended effect of making it far easier for people to annoy us. The billions of emails, V-mails, and text messages sent every day threaten to overwhelm us like a plague of e-locusts. We hate people who play favorites, people who make the rules, people who don't give others a break. You know who we're talking about. The people who lie in the shadows at your meeting and after you've just made an awesome presentation stab you with, excuse me, but have our customers asked for this? So there's a sample of I Hate People by Jonathan Lippman and Mark Kershon. Back to you, Groucho.
Thanks, Charlie. So visit audibletrial.com/randomvarietyshow right now to take advantage of this fantastic offer. Another way that you can support the show is with a direct donation through our PayPal donate button. Now stop and think about this for a moment. Imagine that you're out on the town having a wonderful dinner at your favorite restaurant. The food is delightful, the service is outstanding, and you really truly enjoyed the last couple hours of your day because of this exceptional dining experience. Now, it's time to pay the bill and tip the service. Well, in the case of the Random Variety Show, there is no bill. The show is free. And that's where the donate button comes in. It's a way of you to tip us for the service provided. How much do you appreciate the show? Or better yet, why don't you buy us a drink? Donate the dollar amount of your favorite beverage from your local retailer or local pub, and we'll mention you and your drink right here on the program. Or not, it's your choice to be anonymous. Now, the easiest and cheapest way to support the show is by going to iTunes and rating, reviewing, and subscribing. By taking 30 to 60 seconds to do this, you help the show grow. And if you're listening through Stitcher Radio, give us a thumbs up for every episode. That helps share the Random Variety Show with other Stitcher users. And lastly, the best and least expensive way to support the show is by telling a friend. Remember, everything starts at randomvarietyshow.com. And now, back to the show. And I think that leads us right into the Bernard Pivot questions. Are you familiar with the Bernard Pivot questions?
Only from listening to you administer it.
For our listeners, Bernard Pivot questions started in France by Bernard Pivot, and most of the American listeners are going to be more familiar with it from Inside the Actor's Studio with James Lipton. 10 in-depth questions that he asks his guests at the end of every interview. And the first question is this. What is your favorite word?
My favorite word, I think, is I am going to say pickle.
And what is your least favorite word?
Nozzle.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
A new idea turns me on creatively.
And what turns you off creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
Dullards. People that just don't get it, whatever it happens to be.
Number five is a favorite amongst our listeners. What is your favorite curse word?
I guess f***.
you don't sound so happy about that.
I wish there was something more evocative, but that one seems to just sort of, whenever I find myself in a really dire situation, for some reason, that just comes out. So
you and about everybody else.
Exactly.
What sound or noise do you love?
The sound, and this will sound trite, but it's true, the sound of a child laughing.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
Car crash.
What profession, other than your own, would you like to attempt?
Actually, can I amend my last answer?
Oh, absolutely. Of course you may, sir.
It's that three breaks and that moment of dead silence just before the car crash.
Ah, that moment of silence that seems to last forever.
Your shoulders kind of go up and you know it's coming and there's no stopping it. Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. What profession, other than your own, would you like to attempt?
I think I've done most of them. Let's see. I guess I'm going to – well, you know what? When I was a little kid, literally 8 years old, I always had this weird image of me in a like a chemist's or a scientist's smock or lab coat. So I guess there's always been this idea that I could somehow become a whiz at science.
And what profession would you not like to do?
Anything requiring heavy lifting.
And lastly, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You have been here all along.
Fantastic, Mark. Tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and Succotash.
Absolutely. They can just go to our home site at succotashshow.com. We also have a Facebook page. They're welcome to like us there. They can find us on Stitcher Smart Radio. They can find us at iTunes. Of course, reviews and ratings are always highly regarded by anyone in the podcast field, myself included. And they can also go to markhershon.com, although I haven't updated in a while. Succotash is probably the best thing because I do a full blog entry for every episode that I do, so that's very up to date.
Marvelous, marvelous. Well, now we're going to send this back to the studio and let them edit it up.
Chop the hell out of it.
No, they probably will.
Well, Groucho, this has been delightful. Thank you so much.
The pleasure was all yours.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Groucho. I do appreciate it. And I am proud to say that Reginald did not have to chop the hell out of it. That's the entire interview. To recap, Mark's favorite swear word, it's the ever-popular F word. And the thing that I found most amazing from that interview is that Joe Paulino is Bill Haywatt. Or could it be that Joe is possessed by the spirit of Bill Haywatt? Anyway, Mark mentioned that his favorite moment so far, and when he laughed the hardest doing the Succotash podcast, was when he co-hosted with Phil Learness, and Phil was excited to meet Bill. Here is Boozin' with Bill from episode 32.
It's always fascinating to hear how people from other parts of the world view news events and issues of the time, you know?
Here comes. It's Bill Haywatt. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
I should have warned. Well, should have warned you.
Well, you know, the Sherman's really kind of rare on you. The older you get, it.
Bill Haywatt.
I've heard so much about you. It's a pleasure to meet you. It's very good to meet you, Dave. Thank you for coming.
I'm glad you remember that we had a guest.
We're going to have a little
his
fun.
His name's Phil.
Yeah, Phil.
Phil. I'm sorry.
That's
Phil.
All right.
Phil Hot. Phil Arness.
Yes, exactly.
I worked with your father, Jim.
Jim Arness. Arness, yes.
I worked with him.
Yeah, absolutely.
We were working at, East McKeesport. I was the assistant booth announcer back then.
Feel free to just call me Mr. George Takei, however.
Mr. George, how are you? Listen, I've got a great beverage. Come over.
Well, let's make our way to the wet bar.
Come over to the wet bar here. Come over to the home of the hit. I'll tell you, this is the home of the hit. We're gonna live it up now.
I promise, Phil. Now, yes. I promise that you would be making up for the barbecue punch.
Oh, listen, I'm so sorry. I had something in mind with the barbecue punch, and it was a 4th of July beverage, and I was going to go for the savory rather than the sweet, and yes. I'm so sorry.
It was more nauseating. Oh God, that's the sweet.
I'm so sorry, but that's all right. This one is much better, and we're going to just get right to it here. We're going to start out. First of all, we're going to do. I've got a little pitcher here. I've got some vodka. We're going to start off with. Two shots of vodka.
What can you possibly do to vodka?
This is a drink that I got when I was assistant booth announcer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. I was working with a blind engineer, and his name was Hillel Markowitz, but we just called him by his professional name, which was Stephen Williams, and he showed me this thing. It was like we wanted to keep warm. It was very, very cold. And since we were working all night in close quarters, we wanted to inundate ourselves against any germs that we have. So this is a very healthy drink. And what we always say with boozing it, Bill, if it's good to you, it's good for you.
Yeah.
And this is going to be good to you and good for
good
you.
Advice.
Now, one of my favorite drinks here, we're going to put a little bit of this in here. We're going to put a little absinthe.
Okay.
So we've got...
It makes the heart grow fonder.
Hell yes. So we've got one... We've got two parts of vodka,
yeah.
And then we've got to get the one part of the absinthe here.
Yes.
All right. There we go.
All right.
And then we've got a couple secret ingredients that we're going to put in here, and one of them is, please excuse
me. So far it looks like mouthwash.
That's good, yes. And one of the ingredients is Red Bull.
Okay.
And since we are making it healthy here. This is sugar-free
for my diet.
Red Bull.
This is perfect.
Yes.
This is working out
sugar-free
well.
Red Bull. So it's two parts vodka, one part absinthe, making the heart grow fonder.
I have to remember this.
And then
the
we go
on the website.
Three parts of the
sugar-free.
Bull.
Sugar-free.
Not just any Red Bull. I mean, most people I hang out with say, I don't like to have so many things that end with I-N-E, but... It's got a lot of good enes. Taurine, benzene.
Benzene.
Don't put that on the website.
So then we've got this. And now the real secret ingredient that you want to remain healthy with, we're going to put the secret ingredient here. This is Emergency.
Okay.
We're going to put a little packet of Emergency. Right. That's why we call this...
Wow.
Steve. Steve called this the Red Sea. Because, you know, you've got Red Bull, and it's not really
so
red.
That's the
it's
name
kind
of, the
of
drink
piss
is the red
yellow.
Sea.
This is called the Red Sea.
Okay.
And pour that right in there. And then we're going to... Excuse me.
Oh,
I've got a little more in here. And we got it's good. You've got to drink it cold. It's best when it's served cold.
Of course.
So we're going to put a few...
Revenge.
Oh, yes, that's right. So
this,
we're going to shake it up
this
here.
This knocks you out, keeps you awake, and keeps you healthy.
Wow. It keeps you awake, it puts you to sleep, and it keeps you from sneezing in you over the microphone windscreen, which you want to avoid at all costs. So we're going to put some ice in here. We're going to make it nice and cold. Okay. And then put it back in the little...
You never know what's in store for you.
Oh, you're going to live it. We're going to party down, boys. See, now it is indeed red. You can see it's indeed red.
It's a rich pattern history you have.
Well, I've been off and on that wagon so much, I've changed the tires on it so many times. So, we're going to pour in here. Look at that. Oh, my goodness.
Nice.
You don't strain the ice out.
Now,
I got enough.
Phil, you told me beforehand that you don't mind drinking during a podcast, so... I hope we don't mind drinking this. Stands fast now.
I don't mind drinking before a podcast, during, or after.
Well, then we've got a little bit more than we expected here,
so we're all going
to enjoy it. So the Red Bull from my good old friend in Moose Jaw, Hillel Markowitz.
The Red Sea.
I got the
The lime wedge.
Absolutely. Because we need the real citrus.
That's
in there.
Right. Here we
don't
go.
Want to
a little
get
bit
scurvy.
Of, there we go. A little bit of that. A little lime. A little squiz.
The fog has really rolled in here in the hills in Sausalito.
That's
it's
right.
The home of the head.
The home.
And it's actually clear.
All right,
outside,
there. You drink this. Drink this. There we go. Now then, truly, truly to your health. The Red Bull. Okay, there we go. Well.
Actually. That is not bad.
It's not bad, is it? But it's really like, it's about the health benefits.
It's like...
It's the health benefits.
It tastes kind of like a cough drop.
But the kind that'll get you f***ed up, though, son. It's a good cough drop.
Right.
It's
Phil, as the newcomer here to... you're the first live visitor
that we've had. As opposed to the dead visitors that we've had over time.
What do you think?
He's not smiling.
I take this very seriously. No, I take my responsibilities as a
taster. Drink responsibly, of course. Yes, taste responsibly. I mean, It's got to be a little medicinal.
Yes,
right. Because it is the Red Bull. But it's, I mean, look at this. It's got 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in it, and it's a dietary supplement, so it's got to be good.
And of course, the absinthe also has, you know, always a very unique signature.
Yes, well, the wormwood aspect of it. You're going to be seeing people crawling around here shortly. And so, thumbs up, thumbs down. You're loving it? You're hating it?
This is the first time I've actually drained my glass on Boozing with Bill.
Absolutely.
So. It's a winner, ladies and gentlemen.
Here's the difference between the cough drop element that you were describing and this.
A little bit more here.
Is it when
a little bit more?
I think it's suddenly become cross-talking with Boozing with Bill.
Okay.
Don't talk about that boiler.
You were going to say
no, it leads with the medicinal taste. It doesn't have an aftertaste. No. It leads with the medicinal taste.
Yes.
The after is smooth. It's a clean,
clean finish.
Nice. I like that.
I haven't had a clean finish in a long time, so I keep moving around to so many different...
That's the name of your memoir.
The longest job I've had in my career has been with the... Sorry, I read that on your shirt. So anyway, that's it. It's the Red Sea. You heard it about it here from me, from your old friend,
will be up on the
Bill
website,
Hayward. Hell yes.
Proudly and so.
Absolutely happy. Well, I'm going to go back in now.
Cheers.
To your salute. To your health and happiness always. Toujours la femme.
Oh, excellent.
Sorry.
Bill Hayward. Bill Hayward leaving the red light on. The Red Sea.
And lastly, for our clips from Succotash, when I heard this opening of episode 58, I said, right on, Mark, that is such a perfect summation of podcasting.
From Studio P in Sausalito, the home of the hit, it's time for...
Succotash.
The number one comedy podcast about comedy.
Podcast.
And here's your host, internationally recognized comedy podcaster, Mark Hershaw.
Yes, it's your old pal Mark Hershaw here with Epi 58 of Succotash, the comedy podcast. Welcome back, or if this is your first time passing the Succotash, glad to have you with us. Usually, our format tends to be me playing clips from a bunch of podcasts from around the interwebs, and I do mean from around the World Wide Web. We've played slices of shows from Australia to Ireland, and from Canada to Peru. Of course, the main bunch of dirt in the middle there, that's the United States, which is where we are, and where a lot of the other podcasts originate from, but I try not to play favorites. Actually, I do play favorites because a lot of the podcasts we end up clipping turn out to be favorites. Sometimes they're not the funniest or the slickest produced shows around, but the comedy podcasters themselves, by and large, are a great bunch of men and women. Most of us do this without a whole lot of money, if any, or thanks, and podcasting represents a huge chunk of free entertainment. So do what you can to show your appreciation for these shows. Go up to iTunes and rate the shows you like. Give them a review, or if you listen on Stitcher, give those shows you're enjoying a thumbs up, because those ratings count in our little world, a little world of over 100,000 different podcasts, and just like the shows themselves, giving us your ratings, reviews, and blessings don't cost you a dime.
Mark, thank you again so much for being on the show and allowing us to use those clips. And no dedication homage show to Succotash Comedy Podcast would be complete unless we heard again from the wonderful Henderson's Pants.
Trusted friends, are you part of the 99%? With tax season just around the corner, there's no better time to hitch up your britches and occupy a pair of Henderson's accountant's pants. Created by Henderson's Pants CFO Samuel Grifter to keep track of the company's then meager finances right after the stock market crash of 1929, these trousers have a series of interlocking rear pockets made for storing and sorting receipts, invoices, and financial records of every kind. Perfect for day-to-day purchases as well as those one-time big-ticket items. Just pop the paperwork in the patented paper pusher in the back of every pair of Henderson's accountant's pants, and it is tucked away in the correct pocket every time.
And these pants aren't just for keeping receipts in your seat. While you're taking care of business in the back, our deep pockets in the front are roomy enough to move all your money out of those giant banks and keep that folding green close to home. While there's no accounting for taste, you'll be cooking the books in style with your Henderson's accountant's pants. These trousers may be expensive, but even if you end up breaking the bank to buy a pair, they're made to tighten your belt automatically. And when tax time rolls around, there are no more forms to fill out. Just drop trow and send your Henderson's accountant's pants to the IRS. From now on, instead of giving Uncle Sam the shirt off your back, you can give him the pants right off your... Originally designed for Black Friday, Bernie Madoff, and national bankers who have trouble keeping their pants on, Henderson's accountant's pants are available wherever the 1% are making a mockery of capitalism. That's Henderson's, makers of fine trousers and pantaloons since 1783. And now back to Succotash.
This is Truth and Lies.
Reminding you that there is no need to RSVP for the RVSP. Just subscribe on iTunes.
That's right, guys. There is no need to RSVP for the RVSP. Just subscribe on iTunes or use the Stitcher Smart Radio app, available for iPhone, iPad, or Android. You can also catch the show on WQ4DRadio.com every Friday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. WQ4D Radio, the upbeat, classy, rock-your-mind radio streaming 24 hours a day at WQ4DRadio.com. And, of course, you can hear all past episodes at randomvarietyshow.com. I'd like to thank our guests right there for the slogan. That was the band Truth and the Lies, their episode Season 2, Episode 2. Catch their interview with Groucho. Our opener was done by the guys from FFOP Radio. That was Season 2, Episode 8, last episode. You can check all those episodes out at iTunes or randomvarietyshow.com. And be sure to listen through all the way to the end of this episode for our closer, done by none other than Mark Hirschhorn. Listener feedback time. That's right, it's a chance for me to give back to you because you've been giving it to me for the last 2 weeks. And the last 2 weeks have been really special, to be all honest. I have to say thank you to everybody because my birthday is July 30th, and I didn't announce it. A couple of the fellow pod gods are friends with me on Facebook, and of course Facebook gives away the birthday, and so one of them posted on Twitter, and then it was like the floodgates opened. I got tweets from a bunch of people, so I have to say thank you to everybody for that. I'd also like to thank Jeffrey Welchman for his iTunes review. During the hiatus, I missed it. It was done back in April. Jeffrey, thank you so much for that wonderful review. Listeners, keep an eye out on the Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, because I'll be posting a photo of that review. Be sure to check out Jeffrey Welchman's podcast, The Inverse Delirium, available on iTunes and Stitcher. In fact, check out episode 61. Why? Well, I guest starred on that with Ed Wallach, and we were in the podcast with Lewis Black. What? That's right. And for those of you wondering what I did do for my birthday, well, aside from getting this new microphone, my wife and I went out and had sushi. It's one of our favorite things to do, and it's easy enough for us to do, so we did it, and it's just a wonderful experience. And what made it wonderful is the fact that we don't get a chance to go out as often anymore now that we have our little son with us. So when we do go out, it's actually extra special. I'd like to give a big thank you to all the people who've been using our Amazon affiliate link. That's part of the reason why I could afford this Yeti microphone. Thanks, guys. I do appreciate you using it. Keep on using it. And all those little clicks and pennies count. And now I'd like to give some of the biggest listener feedback to my wife, Rebecca. Again, her episode, Season 1, Episode 21, for just being who she is, the supporter that she is, and the fan of the podcast that she is. But I want to say thanks. Thank you so much for all your support. It's voicemail time. Give us a call, 619-407-8770, and we'll play it on the show right here. Now, this first voicemail we have is actually pretty random because it's a pocket dial. So that was nice to have a random pocket dial in, and it sounded like, I don't know, a call center, work area, a party without, well, and there's no music, so it was a bunch of talking. A conference? I don't know. Now, next up in our voicemail segment, these are definitely unsolicited, and the timing just kind of worked out to be the way it does. I'm just going to let it roll from here, and the only thing I'll say up front is, just like most people, you call, you leave a message, and as soon as you hang up, you realize, oh, darn it, I forgot to say this.
Hello?
Hi, Charlie, Groucho, and friends. So this is Rebecca, as in Rebecca Stewart Miller, also known as the wife of Charlie, also known as the mother of Drew. I just wanted to call and say welcome back to all of you. I'm so excited that the podcast is back, as I'm sure all of the listeners are. And I know that Charlie's excited that the podcast is back as well. This call is completely my own idea. He had nothing to do with it. He didn't even know that I was calling. And if you hear that overhead, I'm driving past Miramar right now, Miramar Air Base in San Diego, and a jet just went overhead. So it's crazy green. Anyways, I digress. So I was calling because I wanted to congratulate you guys on coming back. I also wanted to let the listeners know how much Charlie has missed you. He has missed you all terribly, and he has missed the podcast a lot. It's definitely been something that's been on his mind. He talks about it all the time. So I know he's really glad to be back, and I know that he would love to hear from all of you. And yes, I do mean all of you. Every single one of you who listens to the podcast, give a tweet, a Facebook shout out, give a call to the voicemail, and let him know how glad you are that he's back and how much you miss him. He does this for you, because if he does it just for himself, then, well, that's kind of silly. But yes, he's glad to be back. He missed you all, and I don't know if he had voiced that, because, well, I haven't heard the new episode yet. I have to wait like all of the rest of you. But, yes, welcome back, guys. Glad to have you back. And happy day. Yay! All right, I'm going to go now. Bye. I know, I just called, but I'm calling back because I forgot something. And if you don't know who he is, it's Rebecca. I just left a voicemail like 30 seconds ago. Anyways, I forgot. I have two things. First thing is, happy World Breastfeeding Week. It was August 1st through 7th, so today, technically, which is Wednesday that I'm calling and leaving this message, is the last day of Breastfeeding Week. But I still wanted to wish all of the breastfeeding mommies out there who may be listening to the podcast or not listening to the podcast a happy World Breastfeeding Week. I am a breastfeeding mommy, so yay. Hooray for boobies. And wait, can I say boobies on the podcast? I don't know. If I can't say boobies on the podcast, then Charlie will just leave me. No, I'm sorry. Reginald will just leave me. I don't know if Reginald will let me say that or not, but we'll find out. The other thing is I have a joke. It's a really silly joke, but I like it, and I thought of it while the phone was ringing the first time, so I want to share it. Why do fish swim in salt water? Because pepper makes them sneeze. That's it. That's all I have. That's all she wrote. And I'm waving, which I know you can't see, but I am waving. Have a lovely day, everyone. Bye!
And if you would like to leave a voicemail, the number is 619-407-8770. We'll play it right here on the program. there's the closing show music. I guess it's time to wrap this baby up. I'd like to thank our guest, Mark Hershon, and all the gang over at Succotash, Joe Polino, Kenny Durdich, and of course, Bill Haywant. Thanks so much, Mark, for being on the podcast. I really do appreciate it, and for allowing us to use the little clips we used. And of course, Groucho, thank you so much for providing the interview. I couldn't do it without you. The website is randomvarietyshow.com. Everything you need to know about the show is right there, randomvarietyshow.com. You can find links to our sponsors, Amazon and Audible. We've got our Twitter link, our Facebook link, our Google Plus link. You can subscribe from iTunes, listen on Stitcher Radio. Give us a call, the voicemail, 619-407-8770. There's a link to our Tumblr, our Instagram. Listen to replays of the show at WQ4DRadio.com every Friday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern. The Random Variety Show is proud to be part of the PodGods Network, PodGodsNetwork.com. Send us an email, therandomvarietyshowpodcast@gmail.com. But of course, all this can be found at randomvarietyshow.com. Our guest for next episode is Jay or Jason or the Angry Ginger from the 7 Days a Geek podcast. Sound effects for this episode provided by GarageBand and freesound.org. You've been listening to the RVSP, the Random Variety Show podcast. Remember, there's no need to RSVP for the RVSP. This is Charlie Miller saying, this is Charlie Miller saying, this is Charlie Miller saying, thanks for listening, folks. I really do appreciate it. Take care of yourselves and each other. Have a great night.
Mr. Marks appears courtesy of the chaotic prattle and vibrations of Mr. Miller's larynx and the marvelous wizardry of the internet. Ooh.
All right, wait for it. Wait for it. Here it comes. Are you ready? Let's go.
Oh, Brad, I wish this moment could last forever.
Oh, I wish it would too, Letitia, but you'll have to excuse me. I have to go to the bathroom.
Jack Bauer wouldn't have to go to the bathroom, especially at a time like this.
Jack Bauer? The guy from 24?
In 8 seasons, that guy saved the world over 23 times and never once had to spoil the moment by having to go to the bathroom.
Gee, I wish I could be more like Jack Bauer.
Me too, Brad. The wedding's off.
Now you can control your bladder just like TV Special Agent Jack Bauer with the Bow Trow from Henderson's, modeled after the actual trousers worn by Jack Bauer of the hit TV show 24. The Bow Trow allows the wearer up to 24 hours of complete bowel and bladder control without pain, discomfort, or permanent damage to sensitive intestinal or urinary tracts. Before Bow Trow, avoiding embarrassing moments like these could only be achieved after months of difficult exercises, painful catheterization, or bulky adult diapers. But now, thanks to the same fabrics used on U.S. government restraining tables, the Bow Trow gently but firmly puts that call of nature on hold, freeing you up to save the world or just your little piece of it.
It's a beautiful moon tonight, Brad.
And if you'll notice, we've been staring at it for over 6 hours.
Yes.
Thank you, Bow Trow. Bow Trow from Henderson's. Innovation in trousers and pantaloons since 1896. And now back to more of Succotash.
Thank you for listening. Please visit www.podgodsnetwork.com for more fantastic podcasts from around the world. Like the Facebook page and follow the Pod Gods on Twitter.